In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next interview is with Rob Stewart. He's a filmmaker, he is a conservationist, he's a photographer, and you know, Rob's a teacher. Rob is a guy who wants to change the way we think about the world, frankly. I mean, I don't think that's too lofty. Rob has big goals, and you're gonna hear that, you're gonna see it, and if you've seen any of his films, you know. Sharkwater, huge film, turned into a massive campaign. Talk about the splash and ripple effect. Rob and I talk a little bit about that. We talk about his film Revolution, we talk about his new film. It's exciting what's coming down the pipeline for him and for us as well. And he talks a little bit about why the sense of responsibility that he felt and as a young boy, really, to tell a new story, and how he fell in love with sharks and how it's changing the way, and how we talk a little bit about how he fell in love with people too. You'll kind of enjoy that story. So listen in, Rob Stewart, sharkwater.com. You can find out more about them, and don't forget to check out my site, davidpecklive.com, for more podcasts. This is Rob Stewart. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today, another special guest today. He's a good guy. He's a filmmaker and somebody that we're going to want to, I think, get into things with in an interesting and refreshing kind of a way. Rob Stewart is with us here today. Rob, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell me, what is it about sharks?
Ooh, as a kid, sharks were like dragons and dinosaurs to me, but they were real. And at the time, we knew so little about them, and we still know so little about them, and everyone was afraid of them. So it created this kind of confluence of perfect things for a kid to be so fascinated with them. And so I started studying them in school and realized they're not like every other animal out there. They're far more important. They're far more significant to life on Earth. And as soon as I found out they were being destroyed, that kind of, you know, set me on a path to working with sharks for most of my life.
So let's talk a little bit about the new film, but let's maybe preface it with Sharkwater. So you were 22. Was that when you started making the film at 22, or was that when it actually hit the theaters?
Yeah, Sharkwater took 4 years, so it was 26 by the time the movie hit theaters.
So I love the audacity, man. I love your audacity, your tenacity, your passion and commitment to this. And just, I mean, wow, there's the metaphor, right? You dove in every possible way. I mean, where do you get that? Where do you get the funds, the energy, the passion for such a huge project?
You don't. It doesn't really come to fruition like that at all. It's never an amount of audacity or courage in the beginning. It's just like something that has to be done, and of course you do it.
Right.
And only by getting into it And looking back on it retrospectively, do you realize how massive a project it was?
So did you, Rob, feel a sense of responsibility or I don't know,
yeah.
moral outrage or something when it came to this issue?
Responsibility for sure. I realized sharks were getting decimated and that I had the power to change that.
Mm.
And as soon as that happened, then I had to do something about it. And not only did I have to do something, I had to do everything that I could. And it just so happened that doing everything that I could also uplifted my life and taught me a great deal and put me on a pathway to change in the world and was massively rewarding. And it became a perfect storm.
Well, it really is incredible. I mean, Shark Waters, help me out here, won over 40 awards at film festivals around the world, seen by over 124 million people. I mean, you created a movement. This wasn't just a film. This wasn't just a passion. This is really gone. The splash and ripple effect here has been huge.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a beautiful journey. And when I started, I wasn't that fond of humanity. I'd seen that we'd been destroying and consuming our world, and by the time I was done with Sharkwater and having it come out and change people's perspectives and push them into action, then I fell in love with people, because as soon as people understood that there was a problem, they changed their behavior and they fought for sharks and they took a stand, and it really taught me the power of information to change the world, because we're all inherently one. And if I feel a certain way about an issue, you're more likely to feel that way as my friend or part of my community. Mm-hmm. So it was a really beautiful lesson for sure. And one I can hope we can keep using to change the world in more profound ways.
Would you call yourself an environmentalist? Does it go deeper than that?
How do you mean?
Well, you're clearly a guy who wants me to think differently about the world as a whole, I suppose. Your comment about we're all one. But you're spending an awful lot of time underwater with animals and with a very specific animal, right? I mean, as like you said, most people don't know the history, the connectivity, I suppose, to sharks and the world. And I mean, I think in the most recent video that you made for your new film coming out, you talk about sharks being very sophisticated and how they're different than other animals and so on. So I don't know, is that because you believe in, being this higher, nature as a whole, the connectivity there, or is it this really for you about the shark? Or is it about humanity,
It's about humanity. It's about humanity. It's about us and our life and impact on this planet. And sharks are a great entrance into that conversation, but it's really not about sharks in the grand scheme of things. Sharks have been here for 450 plus million years. They've survived 5 mass extinctions. There's sharks in the deepest, darkest trenches of the oceans that we'll never be able to find. So there will always be sharks on this planet, even if we succeed in wiping out most life on the planet. The question is more us. Are we going to be here? Are we going to destroy the world we depend on for survival, or are we going to, turn and face this crisis in time? And that's where I think you're going.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation is, yeah, like we're on one living planet right now, and it's believed this planet is a life form, and us on this planet right now are behaving in a parasitic way where we're consuming our host. We're like a cancer in a way, where I don't feel like that at all. I feel we're worth more and we're capable of more, and that our impact on this planet should reflect that. And so I think what I'm trying to do with these movies is to imagine my career in filmmaking over a couple of decades, and to see where I want to take people over that whole journey. And in the beginning, we got to realize our position on the planet, and then towards the end of that journey, we've got to realize that we have a massive part to play in making this place better, and that perhaps our current standards right now or our current goals of sustainability aren't enough in a world where we've already wrought so much havoc. So I think where we're going as a species is to eventually be beneficial, where we make this world better. We provide more life to it. We capture more biomass. We sequester carbon. We bolster life, and that this world can be infinitely more wild and habitable and enjoyable and beautiful for our presence instead of degraded.
So you say, you know, when you were making the film, you were clearly being, you know, driven by this idea that look at the damage we're doing. And then after the film comes out and the campaign and the movements and the desire for change and almost the hope, I guess, you sort of, you know, you stirred up, you started to fall in your words, you started to fall in love with humanity. Is that kind of what gives you hope? Because ultimately it sounds like you got to be a pretty hopeful person to be doing what you're doing. You know, to be putting yourself, you know, in, I don't know, putting yourself at risk, I guess, in a sense. And I don't mean with the sharks at all. I don't mean that at all. I just, you know, you're putting yourself out there in a way. You're challenging the status quo and saying, like things can be better. And I guess my follow-up question to that would be is, you know, are you still hopeful, you know? Came from hope, and are you still sort of going in that same direction? It sure sounds like it to me.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful. I definitely wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't hopeful. And, you know, the hope is us, for sure. The planet's going to be fine. There'll be life here into the future. It's not so much, it's not that I care about one particular species or one particular ecosystem so much that I want to protect that. It's more about us. It's more about, you know, I think we're capable of more. And I think we could alleviate a massive karmic burden if we just started behaving in a better way and living up to our capabilities as a species. So as much as, you know, we're the problem right now, we're the only solution to this.
Nice.
Right. And
so is it, you know, to me you seem like, I don't know what your background is academically, but you seem like a scientist who literally dove in with mask on and just discovered this incredible world of you know, the unknown. For me, the ocean scares the heck out of me, you know, just all those unknowns. And yet there's this unbelievable and clearly incredible mystery to it all as well.
Yeah, and I think the ocean is that way for many people. It represents the sum of many of our fears, the fear of the dark, the fear of the unknown, the fear of being eaten alive, and we're so out of our element in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to anything that lives there, we're so clumsy. So I totally get it. And for me as a kid, I loved the ocean and just had such a fascination with fish and everything that lived there that I wanted to spend time there. And I was also afraid of sharks until I met my first shark when I was 9.
That's awesome.
And the shark was afraid of me. And so from that point on, all of the fears that I had built up as a kid or that I had been given from society about what was going to go on there, they were mostly gone. I could go further and explore deeper and not have to worry about any of that stuff. And I found out this world was fascinating and beautiful and contained crazy creatures and behaviors that we could never see in, you know, 500 million years of evolution on land. It's an amazing world.
Where does that curiosity come from, do you think, for you?
I don't know that it's easy to say where curiosity comes from, but it's fairly deep and pretty innate. But, you know, from everything to do with life and animals, I'm curious about
the
world works.
No, it's just really interesting, the timing of it. You know, I've got a profound love of reading that I kind of blame my parents for, you know. You know, you say you met your first shark at 9. I've never met a shark, Rob. So do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I'm fascinated by this desire. Some people who take those experiences, I guess, is what I'm getting at, and turn it into something else and something other. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. But I was blessed to have amazing parents. And as a kid, they let me have a goldfish bowl and would let me capture creatures and keep them in containers and let me have pets. And so I think that really started it, you know, fueling the fascination. I could put lizards in cages. I could, you know, put a slightly bigger goldfish in the goldfish bowl. And all of a sudden there was, you know, massive tiers of bigger and bigger predators I could get and look at the pet store and And so if it came from somewhere, it definitely would have been my parents nurturing the fascination I had with wildlife.
So tell me a little bit about the new film and where you're heading with this. So you've got a Kickstarter campaign that's coming to an end in a few days. You've raised quite a bit of money already. Can you tell me a little bit more about your plans for it and what you're hoping to do with it?
Yeah, for sure. Right now, we're killing 50 million sharks a year, and we only know where 70 million of those are going into Shark Fin Soup, which was our first movie. And the remaining 80 million sharks that are getting killed each year are turning up in our daily lives without us knowing it, because us not paying attention and being afraid of sharks has allowed industries to relabel them.
Right.
So they're called flake and rock salmon and whitefish, and they turn up in our pet food, in our fertilizer, our livestock feed, they're in our fast food sandwiches, and they're even in our cosmetics.
Wow.
So this is a massive scandal that's destroying the world we depend on for survival, and I think a perfect fodder for a sequel to Sharkwater.
Sure. And you've started shooting it?
Yeah, we've started shooting. We've shot maybe 3 or 4 countries, but we're really just in the beginning stages of it right now. It'll be in production from probably September to February.
Okay.
September to September.
And you now, I mean, you. It sounds to me as I read through the campaign and some of the language, and there's a great video there that I'm sure is going to be available for people to see going forward. But sounds like you got some pretty big plans for this film, and it kind of made me smile a little bit when you know 124 million people have seen Sharkwater, but you want to take this wider. It sounds to me.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I tried to get 1 billion people to see Revolution, our second film. So, you know, not short on ambition.
That's right.
But we'll see. You know, I think the industries have changed. When Sharkwater came out, it came out in theaters first and then went to DVD and stuff. And it's a different world right now. So exactly how people are going to see this movie, I'm not sure. But I know that as we secure all the deals necessary, we're going with the groups that can give us the widest exposure.
Did you have any sense for when you were doing this, you know, I don't know, those moments where, you know, I don't know, you captured certain things, there was an energy and adrenaline, you know, it's not when you're making documentary film, it's not like a set, I suppose, but where you said, wow, this is going to be huge. Like, did you have any sense for where this was going to take you at the time? Or come sort of full circle back to what you said earlier, this was just something you had to do either way.
For Sharkwater, both. I threw everything I had into it because I thought it could be massive.
Right.
And I had no idea how to make a movie. I'd never shot a video camera.
Wow.
You know, I think it was that youthful ambition and ignorance to the size of the task that
sure.
probably helped that along. And as we, you know, went through that journey and came up against pretty significant obstacles, it didn't occur to me at that point that what we were doing was worthy of a movie. I still thought we were just trying to get a movie.
And right.
It was only after we made Sharkwater, basically, did we have to, you know, figure out what the story was. And then the story that happened to me as a, you know, young filmmaker trying to make the movie became the movie.
Right.
And then with this one, I think having made 2 films already and this being my third, I can see a little better into
right.
the film's career into the future and know that some of the things we've captured already and the story that we're going to tell, I have a feeling will have a big impact.
It's pretty interesting to me that your executive producer is also an avid scuba diver. Was that entirely by design, or was that kind of an accidental relationship that developed along the way?
No, that was very much by design.
Yeah, I bet.
Making the movies is kind of the easy part.
Interesting.
Funding the movies, finding distribution, doing the business deals. For a creative person like me, that's kind of hard, or harder.
Right.
So it was important that I found people that were aligned with me and with the vision and understood and wanted to come on this crazy adventure. And Patrice Thoreau is one of those guys. He's a, you know, studio executive from Canada, loves scuba diving. He's a perfect partner to make this movie with.
Yeah, it's amazing. No, it's pretty incredible. But any real surprises for you along the way? I mean, it amazes me, you know, a guy, I mean, I social change is sort of my thing, you know, this idea of little things making a big difference. Your desire, your first meeting with a shark at 9 has turned into this movement, and you know, your third film, I mean, it's an incredible story. And what amazes me is how, you know, you look back, Rob, and you sort of go, wow, okay, some of this is starting to make sense now. But it didn't kind of maybe at the time. And it's really quite marvelous. And and I hope, you know, the work that you're going to continue to do will continue to challenge others to take their thinking and their action to a, you know, to a whole new level. It's really quite remarkable.
Thanks for saying that. I appreciate that. It's been a beautiful journey. And I think the most interesting part about it is almost by working for good in a way, by trying to benefit the planet and benefit other people and species, the amount of energy that aligns behind you is pretty phenomenal. And at any point, you know, like I think every career you're probably going to go into that's worth something is going to be hard.
Right.
You know, so if you get to, if you are fortunate enough to, and I really think everybody has this opportunity to choose a career that could uplift life and make this world better, then you always have more energy to be better, to do more, to work an extra hour, to give it everything you've got. So, you know, in a way, it's been amazing, and I'm definitely so blessed to have found this path.
What I love about what you've done, and we'll probably wrap it up here shortly. I know you're heading back. You're heading back to Toronto, I think, in the next few hours. I was interviewing John Aitchison. He's a National Geographic, BBC, Frozen Planet photographer. Recently, a couple weeks ago, his new book. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called The Shark and the Albatross, and he's had this career of basically sitting on rocks photographing, you know, animals, and going out into the Arctic and waiting for 10 days to get a shot of a seal and, you know, these kinds of things. And wonderful guy, wonderful interview. But what it did for me was it reminded me how much, and I think your Sharkwater for me certainly did this for me in Revolution as well, but this idea that we just have to listen a little more and pay a little bit more attention, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, if we paid a little bit more attention, I think we'd make different decisions for sure. I mean, right now we're kind of running around like life doesn't matter and life is not valued in any of our economic equations, even though our economy drives upon the environment. So if we, you know, paid a little bit more attention, we'd realize that life, the birds and the bees and the trees, were actually our life support system. And that we've built this system that's destroying that life. And oh my God, yeah, that should be the most important thing. Change that right away.
Right.
You know, more important than economic growth, more important than anything else we're focusing on is, you know, are we going to be able to survive in a healthy and beautiful way on this planet? And right now it looks like we're not going to. We're going to, like, if we continue the trends, we're going to devastate a lot of this world and our populations in the process. So we're going to tackle this problem. If we tackle it now, it's going to be a lot nicer for everybody and everything.
Rob, what do you think? You must have some insight on this. What do you think is the wedge? What's getting in between people paying more attention or caring more, you know, about sharks, about the environment, about the decisions that we make, about recycling, something as simple as recycling? Is it just the stuff of everyday life, the busyness of being a parent and of maintaining a job, or do you think it goes deeper than that?
It's a big question.
I know, it's a bit of a doozy. I remember reading a book, Paul Hawken. I don't know if you know the name, but he wrote a book called The Ecology of Commerce, and he talks about you know, you knock on this a single parent's door, and a woman answers the door, and she's got two kids in her arms, and she's cooking dinner, and you want to talk about the environment and how we're going to hell in a handbasket. And, you know, he tells the story, you know, and I don't know that it was a real story. I think it was more of a sort of a parable, if you will. And, you know, this woman slams the door in your face. Yeah, I don't got time for this. You know, like, life gets in the way, right? But this is a matter of life. I mean, this is what's so encouraging to me about what you've done and what you're doing is this, you know, the domino effect here has really only been positive, and so gives me hope, certainly, and others I hope as well, to say, you know, we gotta roll our sleeves up, and time is of the essence here. But I'm always fascinated why you and not somebody else, you know. You know, why you dove in and somebody else didn't, and what is it that I can do to, I'm looking at a book called on my desk right here, right now, Smart Change. It's called by Art Markham, 5 Tools to Create New and Sustainable Habits in Yourself and Others, right? Like, how do you get people to change? You know, it's, as you say, it's a pretty big question.
Yeah. I think, there will always be the woman, that slams the door in the face of the environmentalist because she's got more to worry about with her kids. There's always going to be people that, you know, well, hopefully not always, but I think we can work towards the world better.
That's right.
But if you're hungry,
yep,
your basic needs aren't met, you know, the protection of the environment for a long-term use is not a concern for you. So it's, as people that are trying to think about or design changes in the world, we got to design around those situations. And in many ways, it is individual decisions. It's the decisions you make, and every time you spend money, you vote with your dollars. Yes, we need that. But we also need, you know, we need massive changes within government and system that will, you know, like, if governments did their job, they would manage the long-term health and happiness of the environment and its population. And they're just not doing that right now because they've been, you know, so short-sighted, or they've been corrupted by financial interests. So I think if we, you know, as activists and environmentalists can look at the total picture and not just say it's not just people donating $50 a month that's going to save this world. You know, we're going to have to tackle this in every way. So when you say what is the wedge, like, the wedge is different for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, if someone came to me when I was 9 or 20 and said, you know, the white-sided pigeon is in trouble, I would go back to what I was doing probably,
right.
You know.
Right.
But because I loved sharks,
yep,
it made an impact for me. And so everyone has something different that they love, and everyone's going to have a different pressure point upon which we can push to get them to take action.
Well, I'm so glad that you did have that sense of wonder and curiosity to dig a little deeper when it came to sharks, because I think, yeah, I love what you're doing. Sharkwater, one of my favorite documentaries of all time. It's a brilliant, brilliant piece of work. Rob Stewart, he's a photographer, filmmaker, conservationist. He's a teacher, and now to be the director of a new movie coming out. Have you got a title for the film yet, Rob?
No, not yet. It'll be called Sharkwater something.
But it's going to be about sharks still.
Yeah, man's relationship with sharks, for sure, as a metaphor for what we're doing in a much bigger scale.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, listen, thanks for your time today. Sharkwater.com is where you can find out more about what Rob is up to. And Rob, thanks for your time today. Really appreciate your commitment and your passion. It's encouraging and affirming on a whole lot of levels.
Beautiful. Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate all the kind words.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.